Blog Talk Radio.
You can go home now. We have already taken out the garbage.
I wanted to question them.
We have the answers we need.
I guess that means I have questions for you.
Goodbye, Captain America.
We need to talk. Maybe you just lop off the head of every newcomer who hits town.
If we did that, you wouldn't have yours.
But those Nazis were here for a reason.
Yes. To steal our vibranium. The mineral that can only be found here, in Wakanda. Hitler needs it for the next generation of their missile systems. As do you.
These are dangerous times. You need to choose a side.
We have our own. We take our borders very seriously, and you have crossed ours.
Now look here.
Mistake.
Okay, buddy. I've just about had it. You're just plain rude.
Move back. I've been following your fledgling career, Steve Rogers.
How did you know my name?
I think in time, you will represent to your nation what the Black Panther represents to Wakanda. And that is a good thing. But today, I must teach you a lesson.
Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane!
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
You can go home now. We've already taken out the garbage.
Ha ha! Welcome to the Grindhouse Edition, the double feature edition of After Radio. This is the Comic Shop, 6:03 p.m., folks. Time to talk pulp, pop, comic book, sci-fi, fantasy, video gaming. You know it. We got it. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. That little diatribe is about 2 minutes in length. I could not cut it enough because I wanted you to get the fullness, the richness of that dialogue. That was from the Hudlin-inspired, John Romita Jr.-inspired stop-motion comic book, now straight to DVD, courtesy of YouTube, actually, of the Black Panther. Excellent, excellent. Will we see a movie? I don't know. But it's maybe the next best thing. Again, folks, check it out. Let's go to a quick nerdcore groove. This is the Childish Gambino himself, Donald Glover. We ain't them. We ain't them. Let's groove.
Picking up my fro with my fifth comb. I got a tab at the stone, baby, this long. My little brother was having a little trouble. I hope that he doesn't care that it's in this song. Could be a sound much and talking about how to run things. He said Atlanta wanted something. Waka Jeezy, your future got the streets locked down. Copycats making sure tips keep that crown. I'm fucking around with the truth. Went to see the roots. Quest brought me back on stage in a suit. I wear it hard because niggas say that I'm soft. Even Black Thought thought I'm aiming a little hard. I gotta be honest. Feeling like the other stuff is kind of behind us. Making jokes here and there, then got us some dollars. Trying to show the whole world what it is, and it ain't a game. You ain't shit changed. Weird night and everybody was tipsy, hanging out with Questlove, reminiscing about Whitney. He like, man, we can even make it to 50. That reminds me, I sent a long text message to my mom and pop. I got the same speech when I left 30 Rock. My mom like, why you wanna leave a good job? My dad like, do your thing, boy, don't stop. Shout out to my nigga Lou, shout out to my nigga Swank for hanging at the crib and telling me what you think. Speak from your heart and never compromise what you feel's real. And never let these white people tell you how to feel. Never let anybody tell you how to feel. I wanted what they had back in the fourth grade. Family vacay, you know I did it all. Just to see my little sis by a waterfall. My great granddad bought his own freedom. Walked barefoot to Virginia to start his own peanut farm. So don't be alarmed, man, I'm royalty. Jam of the week, V103. No cosign, no.
All right, folks, excuse the expletives. You know, we try to run a PG or if not G rated operation here. But again, I cannot deny the Childish Gambino run, burn on Afternoon Radio, a.k.a. The Comic Shop this time. But it's time to talk, time for a quick discourse on all things comic book, sci-fi, you know the spiel. Let's get into it. First up, the captain. Time to beam on up, sir.
This is Wakanda, and we cannot be defeated.
That's a pretty good accent there, sir. You might have to get a face shot if we ever see a movie being made. And, of course, we have Daryl B. coming through.
Eventually. Somebody wanted to tell the Steve Rogers voice actor he didn't need to channel the Joker for that scene.
Where'd you get the Joker from that? Why'd you say that?
If you listen to him, it sounds like he's trying to. I'm soft spoken and I'm terrifying. And yo, you should join up with us.
What?
It's Steve Rogers. Come on.
I guess that was meant to be that's T'Chaka, not T'Challa. That's the Black Panther's father in that episode. But the voice acting for him was good.
Talking about Captain America.
No, I know. I'm just saying, comparing the two, that the voice actor for T'Chaka was on point.
The voice actor, you
got a point there. I would agree. I guess I'm going to overlook that because of the intensity of the scene, but they could have done a better job with Captain America. He's a little too, you know, like you said, he really wasn't like that green. He should have sounded more green, more American.
They made him sound like U.S. agent instead of Captain America.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. All right, gentlemen, listen, a lot to get into. Let's get into the obvious right now. And I want Daryl to take point on this. J.J. Abrams, phenom, sci-fi director, bar none. He's going to be the HNIC. Okay. Head nerd in charge, because he's got both realms of the geek world, and I guess he's going to be the overseer on this one. He's going to be Galactus. He's going to lay down the law. What are your thoughts about this? Is this really a good move or what?
Let's remember, 8 weeks ago in my blog, I put the link up where, they're talking to J.J. Abrams about doing Star Wars Episode 7. They're talking about it. Oh, this may be cool. He may be cornering the market. A week later, I put in the blog, all the Star Wars Jedi religion and fans were up in arms about it. Oh, my God. You can't let a Star Trek dude take over our universe. Oh no. No. No Federation's coming out of that. Well, guess what, dear Star Wars fans? They just said, F you. We're going with the guy who knows how to rehabilitate franchises. So bring in J.J. Abrams. We're good. You know, hey, let's see what he's got. He right now is the HNIC or the HGIC or, hell, the HFINC. You know, whatever the connotations you want to go with, He's the man right now, all right? Now, let's put it this way. With him in charge, I think I know where we're going, all right? We're going to see the Han and Leia's daughters are going to be center stage because you know he likes to have strong female roles, okay? It's going to have to tinge with family. He's already not shied away from, he wants to pick it up from, okay, we have the Han and Leia are the parents. They're essentially part of the new council, you know. Luke is running the Jedi Academy, and his so-called student / family is now going around the universe and stuff, and that's when the new empire starts rising up underneath, essentially as the empire and the rebellion switch roles. That's the type of story he's jumping into, because those were the novels he got into reading when he got interested in the franchise. Now the question is, can he make a quality movie? Can he make it good? And you know what? Hey, more likely than not, the answer is yes. Back to you, Afro-Man.
Yeah, you know, I think we have to be careful about this. And also, let me just shout out our friend from the UK, Stanley Kubrick's in the house. And reading what he's saying in our chat room, he says, thank the Lord that J.J. Abrams is doing Star Wars. He says, it's one of the top three choices. And then he says, and where's Yoda? Well, I assume we'll find out. He's extremely long-lived, if I'm going by mythology, Star Wars mythology. Again, our audience knows I'm more of a Star Trek guy. But I have seen at least the episodes. How does it go? It goes in reverse. Episodes
4, 5, 6, then 1, 2, 3.
Yeah,
that's how
exactly.
They were released in theaters.
Right, so 4, 5, 6, I know. 1, 2, 3, I saw one, and I fell asleep on it. It was horrible. Horrible. I mean, all three of them. How do you stand on this also, Gal, about 1, 2, and 3? Prequels.
The best one of the prequels. I like 2. I tolerated 3. And I loathed 1. So that's the way I would do it. That's the way I would say it, you know? 2, 3, then 1, and then of the originals, you go 5, then 4, then 6. So, but to me, the all-time best is Empire Strikes Back.
I was about to get to that. I'm gonna go to that in a moment. Now, Anakin Walker is Darth Vader later on, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. The scooter deal, wasn't that like a death knell? The kid on the kid.
No,
on
Jar Jar Binks was the death knell.
Yeah, that
the scooter
that
deal
was
just sealed the deal.
Now,
you know?
The reason. Now, I like the fact that you brought up Empire Strikes Back for a number. I was just having a conversation with one of our colleagues in the gym earlier this evening, and I just mentioned. Well, I think I mentioned to several people that the one I actually enjoyed growing up was Empire Strikes Back. You had Billy Dee Williams. You had Luke, I Am Your Father. Was that Return of the Jedi? Which one was that?
No. You're right. It was Empire Strikes Back, yeah.
You had that. It had a general serious tone to it. It had more because the problem I had with Star Wars really is that it really is more fantasy than science fiction. It's more fantasy. It's a space opera, but it's not. It doesn't follow the. You know, what's your opinion on what it is? Is it really, science fiction in the general sense of the word, or is it more fantasy?
It's science fiction in terms of the tech, but they didn't really get technical. It was more of a space western. You know, like how Firefly was later, which is infinitely much better than most of the Star Wars films. The movies were supposed to be a space western. When you made it all political with the first one, then you tried to balance political with Kitty in terms of Anakin and Jar Jar Binks and stuff like that. The series essentially lost its way. Okay.
When you saw all of the merchandising and the third one with what were the furry creatures, the bears?
The Ewoks and Six.
All that was like, okay, come on. I interrupted you. Go ahead.
But again, that's it. With Empire Strikes Back, they didn't try to appeal to nobody. And I can honestly say that was the first movie I ever saw where the bad guys won at the end. The bad guys won at the end. The rebellion's just about crushed. You know, Luke loses his wrist, half of his arm.
Exactly.
We'll say wrist, hand. You know, he lost that. You know, Han's captured. You know, Cloud City falls. Lando is now on the run. He was the strongest black person I knew until he got betrayed, and Darth Vader just went, thank you, that's mine now. You know, so he had to destroy Cloud City. The team's on the run. You know, hey, the Empire for all purposes, you know, won that one. But then they came with Return of the Jedi, and you're figuring, yeah, Return of the Jedi is going to be a balls-to-the-wall fight all over the place. And then we got Ewoks. I don't even need to say more than that. Captain can pick up from there because we got Ewoks. Yeah, right there, that should have been a death knell for everybody.
But I have to admit something, though. One thing about, you know, again, we're talking about 30 years ago now. With the technology as for what it was, even to this day, the fight scene in the forest with the cycles, the flying cycles, I thought that was incredible. I mean, looking at that back then as a kid in a theater, I thought it was amazing. Because at that time, I mean, now, if I look at it now, I might not be impressed. But I know at the time, looking at it, I felt like that was a realistic looking thing. It didn't look phony. So, and that's early CGI.
But
who knows what they're capable of now?
But we know, getting back to the regular thing, we know what Abrams can do. Abrams is good with characterization, Abrams is good with fight scenes, and Abrams is great at setting up a plot and having a long-range payoff to said plot. Okay? So, with Star Wars, you know, with Star Wars, it's not just 7 you're signing up for. You need something to last 7, 8, and 9, all right, and build up to something. That's what their fans have been looking for. That's what they want. You're not just signing up to make one movie. This has got to be a big payoff over 3. J.J. Abrams can do that. I don't think we disagree on that one.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm on board. Whereas before, I might not have been. I'm definitely more interested in it because he's attached to it. I guess what my thing with him is, because of all his television work, almost everything that J.J. Abrams has done has been very much of a serious nature. And Star Wars, if you look at the Empire Strikes Back, you mentioned all those things that happened in that movie, was far more dark, far more sinister, far more serious. So I guess what I'm asking is, the fan base, are they going to be comfortable with J.J. Abrams with what he brings to the game? He brings to the game a far more serious sci-fi background. When you think of Fringe, when you think of Lost, all of his work is serious science fiction. It's not Ewoks.
But then you also have to think of Alias. You have to, you know, he's got a balance. You got to think of the aborted Wonder Woman script he had. You got to think of, you know, stuff where he's going to have strong characterization, but you're going to have action. You're not going to have, listen, in Episode 1, Phantom Menace, they went for a period of 38 minutes where it was just talking, no action. Nothing to get fans' juices flowing, just talking, politics, talking, walking and talking. That's what they had to avoid. From that point on right there, everything started sliding downhill in terms of the new trilogy. That's what he needs to avoid.
let's go to the captain. I want to pose a question to the captain as he gives us his opinion. Do you think, because I think, you know, there's somewhat of a cross-pollination with Star Wars, where it's sci-fi, but it's fantasy. Do you think Peter Jackson might have been a better fit for something like this than J.J. Abrams? I'm just putting it out there because of the fan base, what they are expecting. There's a difference between Star Wars fans and Star Trek fans. What are your thoughts, Captain?
Well, that's if you're totally trying to appease these fans and also trying to keep the universes separate. We know the fans would definitely like to keep the universes separate. That's not necessarily the case here. You know, that's not necessarily. I don't know if it would be a better movie or it would not be a better movie. Both these individuals are two heavyweights, regardless of the mere fact. That's the reality at this given point. But it would definitely make a different scenario for something such as this is concerned. You know, I don't know if that would definitely work better. You know, I'm excited that J.J. Abrams is doing this. Definitely exciting. But, you know, for me, as far as the way I always envision Star Wars, this is the way I saw it. Now, maybe I'm getting too deep with it, but this is just the way I always saw it. Take the United Nations, now you put that in space. Think about what I said right there. Take the United Nations, and you put it in space now. That's Star Wars. Instead of you hunting Bin Laden, now you have to hunt Darth Vader, you see, because you're in space. And that's all really how, that's how I always envisioned it. It's nothing more than that. So it's just the fantasy of the UN being put in space. Nothing more than that. Now, if you see it and you envision it that way, it makes a lot of sense because now you're in space. So naturally, the characters are going to have to get more powerful. Things are going to have to get more dramatic and everything else. And that's ultimately how I see Star Wars. And I think because that's the way I see it, J.J. Abrams is the man to go do the movie. Back over to you, Sir Afflinger.
Yeah, you know, I will say again, I'm very intrigued about this. I can't lie, but I'm so much of a fan of J.J. Abrams' work, and we're going to talk about Fringe in the next segment, finally getting to it. But when you look at the breadth of Fringe and what it's about and what some of the subject matter is about, you're talking about, you know, different universes, parallel universes, and all kinds of science fiction versus science fact. It's very heavy science fiction, maybe one day being science fact. The only thing I can think of that Star Wars has come up with is this Death Star that, you know, there have been campaigns toward the president to actually create a Death Star. So I guess Star Wars has its influence. I guess my thing is, when you look at Star Trek, there's so many things that happened in Star Trek 50 years ago, going on 50 years now, that we see in everyday existence. I don't know if Star Wars is at that level yet. You know, our flip phones and widescreen TVs and what's the one I'm thinking of? The iPads, all those are, many have said, are inspired by Star Trek. I don't know, maybe because I think Star Wars has so much of a fantasy connection. Well, but at the same time, to be fair, George Lucas, it does have science fiction bones to it. George Lucas was inspired by Metropolis. If you ever look at Metropolis from the late 1920s, the silent science fiction classic, which is always being rebooted and remastered, I should say, always being remastered. If you look at the main character, the main android in Metropolis, you could see where C-3PO comes from. So, I don't know. I guess I'm more of a Star Trek guy. But
Can I add something?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, Star Trek is based off mainly mechanistic science expanded. What they teach at school at the very small level, and then you expand that mechanistic science. That's what Star Trek is really based off of. Star Wars has mechanistic science, but it also has spiritualism, which is actually defined, how they define it here, is spookism involved with it, and they do not give you the science with it. So it becomes kind of mechanistic spooky. So we get very fantasy with it, if that helps. You know, that's the difference in the two.
Yeah, you're right. There is a mysticism about it.
Yes.
Where Star Trek, listen, folks that are in NASA now, they point to Star Trek. NASA points to Star Trek for like bare bones science fiction turned into science fact. They point to Star Trek. Now that might be because Star Trek preceded Star Wars, but I think it's a little deeper than that. I think Star Trek is realistically something that I can foresee happening in the future. The United Federation, you know, all this tribalism that's occurring politically now might be something that's obviously something that's archaic 300 years from now. 300 years, 500 years from now, you might really see a United Federation. So they're doing things. They seem to really, because science fiction has a lot to do with what we see today. What we see today, extrapolating some of the issues today, and where we can see them in the future. Star Trek is more of a futurist vision, but when you mix in the mysticism in Star Wars, that's where it kind of loses me. And I like Star Wars, but it just doesn't hit me home like Star Trek. But maybe J.J. Abrams, you know, that's the thing that gets me, is that he's so perfect for Star Trek. He's gonna have to bring something different to Star Wars. Obviously, it's a different franchise, and I'm not so sure. It sounds good on paper, but I'm not so sure if it's the best thing. Did he bite off more than he can chew? All right, gentlemen, let's go to a quick nerdcore break. I have some new music courtesy of Adam Warrock. Actually, I played the Childish Gambino a few moments ago. That's from the Royal CD. So I want to go to a quick groove. Actually, Adam Warrock has a Planet Express EP from Futurama, Futurama-inspired EP. So let's go to Futurama theme remix courtesy of Adam Warrock. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
Rise with me to the aliens and all the robots with me. When I plug in the toaster and redefine, then I realize I'm like lost in time. Cause now I lost a couple of hours devouring every episode. Here on the microphone, I'll let you know. Child of the 90s, born in the 80s. Tracy Ullman show, yo, my mother used to say to me, talk like cartoons, they rot your mind. But now my friends and I quote The Simpsons all the time. But you get your choice of top, that's good, gosh dang it. And they took a whole crew off the whole darn planet. To the X in the middle of David Cohen. That marks the spot in the kind of television I know. And I'm poor like Zoidberg. Like Bender, Planet Express package, return to sender. Clumsy like Amy or Dick Van Dyke. And if you never bother watching cartoons in your life, man, I bet you might cry when Fry gets back his dog, like I did watching Jurassic Park.
Let me take a second to compose myself here.
Cause some people think when I'm rapping, nothing is happening on the inside. Trying to make it geekier, nerdy is how you define. Do what I love about what I love most. Parks and Rec, Firefly, Mass Effect, Space Ghost. Cause these shows got me through all those lonely nights when I used to live a life that I didn't really like. Now I'm rocking on the mic, no need for explaining. Big ups to homie Matt Crane and yo. And cartoons playing on the set. I used to play Bart vs. the World in the arcade. Smack Cats with the vacuum in that game. I got bummed when Fox didn't renew Futurama, so I signed a petition or two.
And now it's like back and everything's cool, right? Power to the fans, right? I'm gonna keep rapping. Is that cool, y'all? Here we go. You gotta check it out.
Futurama, where the robots will smoke Cubanas and drink a lot of surfaces until they call their mama. Where you can live until tomorrow with that kind of drama. But try to find another rapper with my kind of karma. I'll do the bender, yo. I'll do the part, man. I'll be dancing before the music even starts, man. Cause rappers talk about music and start, man. I think the argument's just on a house of cards, man. I think music and culture's fun, and it should spark a little bit before the song is done. Hope it did in your chest to feel up the sun. And if you make believe with your toy face or the sun. Yeah, know what I'm saying? I ain't trying to make high art here. I'm trying to have a good time. I hope you had a good time too. Check it out. 31st century rock with me. To the aliens and all the robots with me. When I plug in the toaster and redefine, then I realize I'm like lost in time. And the future's so bright that I hope I got shades on. Glad in the night that the stars still stay on. I'm here to do it.
Okay, we're back once again. Adam Warrock, and that is Futurama, the Futurama theme remixed. The call-in number, folks, this is the Comic Shop, Grindhouse Sundays. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Come on in. The water is warm. We're talking about all things geek, nerd, sci-fi, fantasy, video gaming, you name it. This time around, I guess we're going to segue from a J.J. Abrams discussion back into yet another J.J. Abrams discussion with the conclusion of his Fringe TV series. Now, Fringe has been on for 5 years, and I think we should be thankful for that it premiered in 2008, ends 2013. I wouldn't doubt that probably, if all things considered, this thing could have done another 3 or 4 years if it were allowed to have actually, you know, go to fruition, was allowed to go to its full extent with, you know, a decent set of ratings. But the fan base was strong, so we were lucky enough to get to the fifth year. So I guess we have to be thankful of that. And actually, the finale, in my estimation, was probably one of the best TV I've seen in a long time. When you think of John Noble, who's the actor that portrays Walter Bishop, and Joshua Jackson, who portrays his son, or I should say his son across dimensions, Peter Bishop, the dialogue and the emotion between the two characters was something else, man. I sat there because I'm very close to my old man, close to the Oracle, my father. So when you see that whole father-son thing on screen and how they really, yeah, man, they really profess their love for each other and just, you know, it's going down. We don't know what's going to happen to us. It was pretty emotional. And I think it's one of those – it's going to go down in history of television as one of those TV series that people are not familiar with. They missed the gym on this one. The level of acting on this, you'd have to admit, Daryl, is next level. It's next level. And it's a shame. I think it's because it's under the science fiction description. I think science fiction turns some folks off. It's that brainy, geeky, I have to think type stuff that turns the American audience off. Science fiction as a label is troublesome, I think. That's why we're not going to see our beloved Alphas. It's just, this stuff is just too deep for people. What are your thoughts on the conclusion from last week, Daryl?
The only problem I had it was, really, that's where Olivia's powers come back, right then. After all the trauma this season, then, that's when her powers come back. Outside of that, it was just about pitch perfect. I look at it this way when it comes to Fringe. Fringe is going to be just like Sliders was, just like Stargate was, you know, one of those that people were scared of to look at in the beginning. But as it goes through syndication, through repeats, and stuff like that, people are going to pick up this show and go like, you know what, this show wasn't half bad. I wonder why I avoided it in the beginning. And I'll frankly just look at it like, yeah, you don't know why you avoided it in the beginning, right? Yeah, okay. Let's put it this way. I said it, Grant McMillan from Spinoff Online said it. You know, this was one of the most satisfying endings to a series that I can recall. Battlestar Galactica, the ending let me down. Lost, no. MASH, Cheers, Cosby Show, You know, all these shows have a problem with sticking the landing. This one did. And as a bonus, we got a glimpse into the other universe again. We got to see how Lincoln was. We got to see how Fox Olivia was. You know, thank you. Thank you, Joshua Jackson. Thank you, Mr. Noble. Thank you, thank you to everybody, because we know that Olivia and Astrid and stuff got pushed to her back, and this season it was the John Noble, Joshua Jackson bond that took center stage. But top to bottom, it was great. And hell, I know now Astrid could handle a 9mm. kind of scary, but yo, that shot was right between the eyes. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I have to admit that the way they were able to tie all that fringe science from the past episodes into the last two or three episodes going into the finale was pretty amazing. They were able to actually tie a bow and bring in all that fringe science, which is essentially what Fringe is about. It's about the investigation on from the Fringe Division on fringe science phenomena. And the only thing I will say, Ralph Sorella, who is Howard Stern's right-hand man, who has his own geek-inspired show called Geek Time, courtesy of SiriusXM, he loved the finale. Howard did not like the finale. He had problems with it. But he said, as a makeup guy or, you know, a fashion guy, he didn't care for Folivia's makeup, that she didn't necessarily look aged. You know, she just had this wacky wig. That part I have to agree. If you're going, I mean, listen, I'm not going to be a stickler for everything. Sometimes you let things go because of the preponderance of what it was. It was excellent television. But if you're going to be picky, she's supposed to be 20 years older than the original Olivia. But Folivia seemed to be a little bit, you know, she just didn't look any really older. She just had a crazier hair. He felt as a makeup art, as a makeup guy, that they could have done better on that.
And we really didn't need to see the tapeworm again. The tapeworm, no, we didn't need to see that again. We knew what was going to happen. We didn't need to see that. I was like, oh, I'm eating here. Oh, come on. But yeah, just to show that they pulled off all the stuff with this final plan, and rest in peace, September. Oh man, but you knew he was gonna. Yeah, you knew that was gonna happen. Back to you.
And something else that someone brought up is that to really have brought it home, what they should have done is they should have given you a glimpse of the future with Leonard Nimoy as one of the guys that has to be, you know, one of the science directors, something to that effect. They thought that would have been, that would have just, as you said, ball to the wall. I don't know why that didn't happen. I mean, we know that Leonard Nimoy is getting older, and he doesn't really want to do this acting thing anymore. But that would have been a great crescendo if he ended up being the guy that they had to meet to bring this younger what are those guys called, Daryl?
What?
The intruders, the actual
observers.
The observers, yeah, exactly, the observers. If he this kid observer when he was brought to the future.
Not the craziest thought I ever heard, but the other one that people were running with all of a sudden was, wouldn't it be crazy if Leonard Nimoy was Peter's original son, and he came back, and that was his way of getting revenge by being erased from the timeline? And I was like, that is crazy, that is nuts, and only me as a longtime geek can accept that theory. They're never going to put it on television because you would lose half the audience. But only me, as a longtime geek, would accept that.
And let me be you know, more accurate for our audience. The character that Leonard Nimoy played was
William Bell.
Yeah, Dr. William Bell. So it would have been great if he had been at the very end. But otherwise, I really don't have any complaints. Now I will say this: they did give you that twisted ending because you know that September was able to communicate with Walter with that whole picture of a tulip. And you saw the tulip at the very end that Peter opens up this mail addressed from Walter Bishop, his father, who is now not part of the time stream. So it's, and then he had that look of, you know, that look of what, familiarity.
Something. The story is not over. It's telling it to us at this stage that flower represented that the story continues. Even though the show is done, the story continues. And Lord knows we still have a lot of unanswered questions. This is going to go on for years with theories and stuff. And I wouldn't be surprised if there isn't a couple of college theses on this show.
Well, I will say this. I'm going to pass it to the captain. But I do know that earlier last year, during the San Diego Comic-Con, Walter Bishop himself, John Noble, he mentioned that a film could be made further down the line. So he hinted that a film might come out of it. I hope that happens. I really do. I hope that happens. I don't know. You never can tell with these kind of things. Captain, I don't know if you really were into Fringe or had some familiarity with it, but the last couple of episodes, man, were incredible. Any thoughts about maybe science fiction in general, but the fact that this film, it's like when the things that we really like in sci-fi, they barely make it to 5 years. It's, the only thing that was against that trope was the Star Trek stuff. Star Trek was able to make it to 7 years, except for the last one, Enterprise. But regular science fiction stuff, very hard to make it. You know, very hard to make it. What did VSG, what, did 4 years, Darryl?
Yeah, four or five. Five if you count the beginning pilot.
And it's always about the passionate fan base, the cult following. It's something, I'm telling you, it's something about the science fiction genre that I think is just dealing with too many things over people's head. Math and science on film turns people off. Some people. Any thoughts, Captain?
I think you're absolutely right. I think that definitely has something to do with it. I think at times these executives, they're looking for huge numbers. They're looking for a situation, okay, it's been at this level and it's been staying the same. Why can't we make the jump to the next big thing, and let's just get rid of it and then start over and do something else. And then they do the same thing over. It's the same numbers at the end of the day. Science fiction brings in but so many numbers, you know, at the end of the day. That's what it's going to bring in. And the reason why is it is over a lot of people's heads. They don't want to think. They want to be dumbed down. They like reality TV. Nice and dumb, and it make you feel good. Sometimes when you watch these series, you have to actually think. This is what I do. Sometimes I look and I say, wait a minute. Let me look. I have this book. I have this science book from this certain scientist. Let me see. I said, yeah, that's a possibility. I used to do that a lot doing Star Trek. That's what I do. I actually see if the science really does make sense. That's me thinking. That's something that I like to do. You know, and that might be over a lot of people's heads. Reality TV is very simple. It makes you feel good.
I just got missing alphas more now. Thanks, Cap, involved the reality science. Hey, funny thing about that, too. I'm at the bar last night, and a couple of my bouncer friends come up to me because I got them into watching alphas, and they're like, Darryl, please tell us it isn't canceled. I'm like, yeah, it's canceled. Like, what the hell? I'm like, yeah. And my boy Garen just shouts out, it's the closest thing to X-Men I'm ever going to have. And I'm like, yeah, there it goes.
We're going to go to another musical break, but isn't that the problem? It's that, these folks that you think would not, if they give it a chance, almost indelibly, when you give these series a chance, when you tell people, hey, if you sit down, relax, open up your mind, sit your ass down, and take a look at this thing. like 90% of the time, these people come back. What happened? How come I didn't know about this? A lot of this stuff just goes over people's heads. And then, like you said, look at Blade Runner. Blade Runner is a 30-year-old franchise. When Blade Runner came out, it was so not Han Solo. It was so not Indiana Jones. As a sci-fi kid, I got it. But I remember when people looked at it, they were like, I don't, they didn't know what to think of it. But it stuck around because something that is quality and is of a serious nature does not go down easily. It's like jazz. Jazz sticks around now because, honestly, people don't understand jazz, but when they get it, it becomes embedded, and now you understand. And Fringe, I'm telling you, when you saw the way these characters, the interaction between the actors and the characters, what have you, and the fringe science that was discussed, it's going to stick around. People won't get it then, but they'll get it later on. I guess it's the nature of things. I guess it is the nature of things, gentlemen. I'm just disappointed that, you know, we won't – well, listen, maybe we'll get a movie. Maybe we'll get a movie. I don't know. All right, listen, let's go to a quick Nerdcore groove. This is Mega Ran, Nintendo Power. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
Yeah, I'm an OG Fun Club member, you know what I mean? So hearing this news got me a little upset, though. Yeah, browsing my RSS feed, it's a rarity the tech news manages to upset me. But my jaw was stuck on the floor when I read Nintendo Power will be shutting its doors. From the day I got the first issue up in the mailbox, had me on lock like prisoners in cell blocks. Mario 2 and the Zelda Second Quest, totally obsessed. From that day, I never rest, keeping me updated with the products, laughing at the Howard and Nesta comics. One time, I even called the hotline, ran up the phone bill, got screamed on by mom. She was mad at me, even took a jab at me, but that didn't stop me. I was all about the magazine, Nintendo Power. Who showed me the code to Tyson, Nintendo Power. Who got me unlimited lives in Mario 1, and now that you're done, I figured the least I could do was get to writing. I waited impatiently for every issue, wanna let you know we gonna miss you, Nintendo Power. All the games you helped me get through, all of the tips in every issue, it's all over, is this true? I just wanna let you know we gonna miss you, Nintendo, 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 Nintendo Power. For 20 years, Nintendo Power has focused on game strategy, tips and tricks, and was the ultimate source of detailed insider knowledge directly from the programming team. Seeing is believing, whoever thought I could be in a magazine I grew up reading. And before I had a stage name, all I did was play games, sort of like a fiend, waiting until delivery day came. And I'm not asking you to come back, even though we all think we would want that. I could get mad that the mags are finished, but truthfully I hadn't touched one since I was in it. But I'm a history buff, I hate breaking tradition. A huge part of game journalism is missing. Without Nintendo Power in the mix, where would I spend those hours? The tips and tricks like torrential showers coming down, suddenly reducing the drops, and then it all stops like a first round KO. Imagine the day though, you go to the doctor but nothing's on the table. It boggles my mind, hard to fathom, but I guess it's a sign of the times. I'm providing the rhymes to offer a thank you for issue number 3. Because of that, I came to the memory, I savor it. Each one's my favorite. Now you the power that I'm playing with, 'cause y'all the reason I heard of Mega Man. Without that, I'd still be doing lesson plans. Face the EGM and Game Pro, Game Informer, and the rest ain't the same, bro. So I read PDFs to every issue, wanna let you know we gonna miss you, Nintendo Power. All the games you helped me get through, all of the tips in every issue, it's all over, is this true? I just wanna let you know we gonna miss you, Nintendo, 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 Nintendo Power.
Nerdcore, folks, once again, Mega Ran, Nintendo Power, the call-in number. This is the Comic Shop, the call-in number, 646-915-9620. Gentlemen, let's go to a transition. I want to talk about this idea of Phase 2 and Phase 3, respectively, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Now, I'm just hearing that Doctor Strange is on some kind of fast track, I think, for Phase 3. Darryl, what's your best description of what these phases are and what will we get out of them?
All right. Well, it's simply put, Phase 2 is simple. Phase 2 is going to be the second Thor movie. It's going to be the second Captain America movie. It's going to be Guardians of the Galaxy. It's going to be Ant-Man. Essentially, the stuff we know that Iron Man 3 also. Those five are technically phase two, all right? That's what's going to be. Phase three, you're going to get, if there's a possible third Thor movie, all right? Avengers 2, All right, Doctor Strange, long talked about. You know, if they ever get around to Black Panther, even though, you know, Black country that's strong, we can't show that. You know, it's what it essentially is since Phase 1 and 1.5 were so good, all right, it built it up. So now with Phase 2, you got a foundation to start, okay, we'll try doing some of these properties. And then if Phase 2 is successful, you know, that, okay, here we go, Phase 3, we'll build those up. You know, that's it. That, essentially, what Marvel is doing is they're laying the groundwork to have a movie house of a full of universal ideas. Get the hint, Nisi? Back to you, Alpha Nerd.
Yeah, I couldn't describe it any better than that. Captain, you want to say something?
No, I was just laughing when he said, get the hint, DC.
Yeah, what a joke it's going to be that Justice League Dark is going to come out first, and I guarantee you there'll be people going, Blue Devil, Enchantress. Where's Batman? Where's Superman? It says Justice League. No, it's Justice League Dark. Yeah, okay, sorry, that was my one other dig at DC, so back to you guys.
Yeah, when you look at this website, I mean, there's a lot of websites that are actually unpacking this whole thing with the phases in the Marvel Universe. I'm looking at Screen Rant, ScreenRant.com, and they encapsulated exactly what you just said, Daryl. And they also threw some shade towards Warner Brothers, obviously. I'm just going to read this briefly. It says, sure, things are hard to come by in Hollywood, but Marvel has almost half a dozen comic book franchises now certified to print money. The Avengers 2, Iron Man 3, Thor the Dark World, Captain America Winter Soldier, and Guardians of the Galaxy are all in production with a new host of talent behind and in front of the camera. With the crop of sequels ultimately setting the stage for Phase 2 and beyond, now would be the time that most studios would avoid rocking the boat. This is what gets me, this is what I think is going to be a bunch of BS. Well, let's see, this is what they're saying now. They're not afraid to rock the boat. But according to Marvel Studios head Kevin Feige, that would go against everything that brought them their success in the first place. It was taking big risks and sticking with them that has worked so far. And going forward, fans can expect to see, for better or worse, even bolder choices and even bigger risks over the coming years. Now, I want to say one more thing here. This is the next paragraph. It may seem counterintuitive, but building a successful movie franchise around a universally adored comic book hero is hard to do. A recognizable star and strong marketing might pull in a big opening weekend, but lasting success and critical acclaim are far harder to reproduce. One need look no farther than Marvel's biggest competitor, DC, with their flop Green Lantern, and the need to start their biggest property from scratch with Zack Snyder's Man of Steel. Yet despite the odds, Marvel has managed to chum out winning picture after winning picture, culminating in this summer's Avengers. In winning the summer blockbuster wars and being named the best superhero movie to date by many, the team-up brought Phase 1 of Marvel's movie plans to a successful close. So, okay, I'm hearing this. I'm hearing this. But I know when it comes to black folks, the risk stops there.
So the only way I'm going to get my Black Panther picture is if I get Iron Fist, White Tiger, Shang-Chi, the Master Kung Fu, get them all together, being formed by Black Panther to take on a stereotypical villain like Yellow Claw. Yeah.
You still might not get it. I tell you how you get it. You go to them, you somehow miraculously raise the money and say, I have $100 million. This movie's coming out. Then you'll get it because you paid for the production costs. You paid for it.
Well, you know what? I think that Hero for Hire, that's been mentioned as well. I think Hero for Hire is going to actually – I can see that because that follows the black and white buddy trope. That follows something they've seen before. Look how many iterations of what was the film? The one with Mel Gibson and Danny Glover.
Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon. Look how that's been around. I'm surprised they haven't rebooted that.
Oh, it's coming. That's coming. But Heroes for Hire could launch the Black Panther movie, because remember, they're working for hire. Wouldn't it be cool at the end? Who's the mysterious benefactor they're working for? T'Challa.
Well, you know,
and there's your leadoff.
Well, listen, I thought of a lot of things. Even in that clip with T'Chaka, 1940s Black Panther, fighting 1940s Captain America. The fact that he knew that Captain America was Steve Rogers, I can already see, and this has been hinted in comic books, you can see Wakandan operatives in the 40s being janitors, you know, being docile black folks, and being around all this stuff being discussed, and they think, oh, he's, you know, this black, he's nobody, but he's a Wakandan operative. Yeah, is that kind of thing? See, when you really get into Black Panther, what he really represents, the Marvel, they really are the house of ideas when you get into it. For many years, I know Dow knows about this, early Avengers, George Perez Avengers. Black Panther was always this guy with a cool costume, and he was always this Wakandan leader, but they never really went deep into his mythos. When Christopher Priest comes along and he gives you a Black Panther mythology, even when Mephisto was unaware of this mythology, it goes into the whole. They could go deeper into it. Now he's the Panther of the dead. It just keeps on going on. Will we see any of this on screen? I doubt it.
Yeah, really there it goes. You just answered your question. Unless we turn it into Undercover Brother, it's not going to hit the screen.
I'm not going for that anymore. I want the movie.
Hey, we get on Kickstarter right now to make a Black Panther film, drive up to Christopher Priest's house, Mr. Priest, here's the money from Kickstarter, all of us chipped in, please put me a good treatment for a Black Panther film. That's the only way it's going to happen.
Well, I already
kicked down the doors.
I already tweeted Reginald Hudlin and said, why don't you, QT, and Christopher Priest figure this out? That's it.
Get Quincy Jones to do the soundtrack, you know, and we're off. We can wish, right? We can hope.
Gentlemen, listen, it's time to close the shop. We got about a minute remaining before we go next door. Dow, as always, it's been real. We never even got a chance to talk about Tarantino 20 years being proposed a Luke Cage film.
Next week
with Lawrence Fishburne. We got to talk about that at the top of the next week. All right,
next
gentlemen.
Next week, Dow, and number 13, number 2. Next week.
Definitely. It's been real.
Beard.
Going next door.
black people need to tell the truth about.
One, Rodney King should have got his head beat for driving drunk and being grown in a Hyundai.
OJ did it.
Rosa Parks ain't did nothing but sit her black tail down.
Hey, I'm going to back you up on that, because, see, look, he was on the bus back in the day, and he on the bus now.
Eddie, not only is what you're saying not true, it's wrong and disrespectful for you to discuss Rosa Parks in that way.
Exactly. Wait. Hold on here. Is this a barbershop? Is this a barbershop?
It's a barbershop.
I mean, we can't talk straight in the barbershop. Then where can we talk straight? We can't talk straight nowhere else. You know, this ain't nothing but healthy conversation. That's all right.
You
got to
tell Rosa Parks
that. Ain't nobody exempt in the barbershop. You know that. Ain't nobody exempt. You can talk about whoever and whatever, whenever you want to in the barbershop.
Why you got to tell Rosa like this, Eddie? You know you're wrong. Keep on walking. You're wrong. You're walking by yourself this time, pal. I ain't with you. I'll tell you one thing. You better not never let Jesse Jackson hear you talking about that.
Man,
you're a lord,
Randy, Tito, Freddy, action, I'll take them all
with me. That's all I got, man, I love this. And you,
Chris. You know, Calvin.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funkin' lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
You know, Cedric is a minstrel, but he did say that, you know, Randy, if I have it correctly, Randy, Jesse, Michael, and he said, action, all the Jacksons. He didn't care. So I thought that was pretty funny, actually. Folks, it's Afternoon Radio. It's Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. We have a lot to get into, folks, a lot to get into in an hour. So we'll try our best. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Let's get to a quick groove. Then we will be back post haste. This is D'Angelo and Q-Tip, ghetto music. Let's groove.
So blues and pain, but get along, I love.
They may mess up because they're interjecting too much personality
into the situation. So if you have issues, personality has issues, believe it or not. If you have issues, too much of yourself comes out, and then you mess up. In America, we have sexism, we have racism, we have age prejudice. You have to be very careful when you speak. There's something for you to think about, food for thought. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yes, sir. As always, very profound on that one, and I couldn't agree any more on that. The way things are now, everyone has their own separate universe and their own set of lies. Glenn Beck is a very wealthy person. You know, we spoke behind the scenes, and we spoke about the late, great Mort Downey, who was quite entertaining during the late 80s, early 90s. I believe Reverend Sharpton honed his chops there. A then heavyset Pompadude Sharpton was doing it. Actually, it was an infamous fight between Sharpton and Roy Ennis, the head of CORE, and those two got into an actual physical altercation to the point where Ennis, I believe is probably on YouTube, Ennis pushed a rotund Sharpton out of his seat, and he proceeded to roll across the stage. I kid you not. It was pretty interesting to look at, but we didn't even see anything like that at that point. And Mort Downey was in a role, but it was a short-lived role, maybe about 2 or 3 years at best. Now we have embedded personality franchises, where, as you say, whether it's Hannity, whether it's O'Reilly, these folks have their own universes. Even though Glenn Beck is no longer on Fox, he has his own thing now, his whole master operation. So I think, unfortunately, for the sake of Mort Downey Jr., no relation to Robert Downey Jr., incidentally. Mort Downey Jr. actually was the son of a famed Irish folk singer. But anyway, it's another story. But he was a card. He was a card. And he was a personality. But I think he came a bit too early to where we are now. Maybe one could liken him. Actually, I think there's been people even before him that did this kind of shock television. But he really, as I can think of it, was someone that would probably fit in today's landscape rather nicely. But it is what it is. Folks, you're listening to Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. We have a lot to get into in a short amount of time. Feel free to join on in if you like. The water is warm. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. I want to talk about, and I guess it's a way to sort of dovetail off of what the captain was talking about. I want to talk about this industry of lying, an industry of lying. Last couple of weeks, we've been seeing some rather high-profile individuals who got caught up in their lies. And I spoke to the captain about this a few days ago, and it becomes very apparent that there's a lot of money to be made. Not necessarily by the liars. There's money up front as long as they're able to keep the lie going. But once the lie is outed, those who report on the lie gain quite a few ratings for this. Katie Couric, who's had problems on television, I mean, she's been successful, but as a solo act, she's had some difficulty. Now I believe she's garnered her greatest ratings from this Manti Te'o ordeal. Oprah Winfrey, also successful, but has had problems with her own imprint. I guess like a double entendre with her own imprint. Now this interview with Lance Armstrong, the bicyclist or cyclist, I should say, the defrocked cyclist, garnered some pretty respectable ratings. So we're seeing Lance Armstrong, the Beyonce gate incident from last week. It seems to be this deal where we've created a culture that's heavily inspired, in my mind, from The Matrix. You're plugged into the Matrix. You're plugged into a fantasy world. And it appears that folks don't really care for reality. They don't care for authenticity. Now, I know
I went in last week on Beyonce Knowles. She's a tall drink of water. She's very much my style physically. But I'm not into Pop-Tarts. Not into Pop-Tarts. And I happened to come across this article. I think it was The Root. It might have been The Root or The Griot. I think it was The Root, actually. There's been a number of articles about this Beyonce gate thing. And now there's so many folks that have come to her aid, come to her defense on this thing. It's supposed to be innocuous. Okay, it's supposed to be innocuous. But I did see this article that actually went into the type of personality one might have based on where they weigh in on the Beyonce Knowles thing. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning this is because we can't even tell the truth anymore, folks. We're so tied into this matrix that you just can't come clean. You can't talk about these matters succinctly. You can't be honest. You can't come with the facts. We don't want facts anymore. We want to be plugged in the back of our necks, and we want to just lay on out and cry me a river. Lie to me. Lie to me. I don't want to lie to people. And there's a lot of money to be made if you're successful in maintaining a facade. I actually heard people say, I'm sounding like Fox now, people say, I've heard folks say in my cipher, some are saying, well, who cares? She performed great. It was still a great performance. Wait a minute. How exactly is it a performance if it's a faux performance? Sure, she performed it the night before, and it's on record. But once it's recorded, if I'm not mistaken, once it's recorded and on wax, anybody could have done what she did. That's not really a performance. So we are accepting people faking the funk on some level, and we're cool with that. So there's an industry for lying. Lance Armstrong, for many years, many gold medals were won, many endorsements, and he finally gets around to telling us, once he's trapped, that he took performance-enhancing drugs. And now we have to look at this interview and look at this man. Look at his downfall. And we've become somewhat accepting of performance-enhancing drugs in the world of sports. I don't know if maybe he shouldn't be called to the carpet solely when this seems to be very much a sports thing and not just in cycling, obviously. But I don't think people care, and that's what troubles me. The fact that this article extrapolated that there's so many different types, well, there are a number of different types of people that weighed in differently on the Beyonce Knowles thing, that you have to be a type of person instead of just saying, well, what happened to just being a person that wants truthful, you know, wants to look at something and to assume that what they're looking at is truthful? Why do I have to be a certain type of person? They actually, if I remember correctly, one of the pieces had said that if you – either you're a purist when it comes to how you viewed Beyonce Gate, or you're a traditionalist, you're probably the kind of person that listens to U.K. soul, U.K. jazz. So you know they're talking about me, ladies and gentlemen, who listen to U.K. soul. You probably listen to music that's not that commercially successful. And they went over this thing. I said, well, whose fault is it that it's not commercially successful, Captain? I want you to come in on this. What am I doing wrong? They made it seem as if I'm the kind of person, or anyone who weighed in on this in a certain way, that you probably are X, Y, and Z, that you like all this music that no one is aware of, like it's something wrong with that somewhat. You know, because there's something wrong with the fact that the music that's good or that is of a certain quality that's the problem, that's not the known music. I mean, hip-hop, in its infancy, ladies and gentlemen, was an underground musical form. It was a musical, underground musical idiom that is the norm now. But 30 years ago, it was underground. So what you're telling me is I can't like the underground music today, but there was underground music yesteryear that is the norm now. It doesn't make any sense is what I'm saying. What are your thoughts on this? Am I losing my mind or what? Do I got to start lying now?
You have to start lying if your sole purpose to fit in, if that's your sole purpose to fit in. But there's an old saying. There's a couple of old sayings. When you see everybody going right, go to the left, because the left is where the truth is going to be. The right does not is the lie. That's the saying. There's another saying, and people pretty much heard this one. Believe nothing you hear, and only believe half of what you see. That's the reality, and that's what I prescribe to. So if that's the reality, I don't believe anything I hear. People tell me this, tell me that. I said, okay, let me check this out, you know? Even if it sounds very sincere, I said, let me check this out before I end up being a fool here. And that's what I have to do. And I only believe half of what I see, because sometimes your eyes lie to you too. You have to say, did that really happen? You know, that's what I prescribe to. So if I'm thinking that way, I already feel that the people in front of me are phony balonies. That's a problem within itself. You understand? That's actually a problem within itself. You're a phony. You're a BS artist. I know that already. You have to prove to me otherwise now that you're not that. That's the way I already think. And that's a problem within the system, within itself, right there. That's a whole issue within itself. So even me, because I think that way, I see Beyonce for what she is. She is an entertainer. So in my mind, and I said this before, I go into this on this show at ad nauseum, okay, I go into this. I don't take her seriously. Lance Armstrong, Hamster in a Cage. I spoke about that. A lot of people didn't know where I was coming from, even though I broke it down. Okay? Hamster in a Cage. You're an athlete. You're doing what you do. The money that you make is incredible. And ultimately, we worship the money. It's not so much about the performance. We're really worshiping your money. Because if we take away your money, no one really cares. But you're a hamster in a cage. So again, you're into amusement. You're amusing me. You're not really taken seriously. You understand? So that within that is a whole problem within itself. That's just my perspective, my philosophy on the whole situation. These people I don't take seriously. Just sing, dance, jump, and do what you do. It's nice. Let's keep it moving. Okay? Someone such as Obama, I have to take seriously. The police officer, I have to take seriously, even though they can be full of it. You understand? The fireman, I have to take seriously. The person with the investment firm, I have to take seriously. Everybody else, you're singing and dancing, you're doing all the good stuff. That's it. It's amusement. It's amusement. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Well, you know, I guess what I'm saying is it's a telltale sign of this Matrix analogy that I've been making.
Absolutely.
Now Manti Te'o is of a generation who's been plugged into the Matrix, obviously. And when you go into a story, I don't really understand this guy's story. And Sergio was listening, our friend from Chicago, Chi-Town, and soon to be our official entertainment critic. You know, Manti Te'o, I can't even tell you what the story. I mean, he was tracking in a certain direction, Captain. Notre Dame footballer. Ready to make that next leap into professional sports. And now, I don't know what team would take this guy on. Because he's incredibly naive, incredibly dim, too many shots to the head this early. And the whole thing is, you know, it's part of it. It's a partial lie because of embarrassment. I mean, if you don't know what's happening now, and I wonder about even discussing this. So the only reason why I thought about discussing this, Captain, is because to me it ties into a larger theme. of folks who need to lie, and we have younger folks that are creating these false identities. In general, Manti Te'o is just, he got caught, first of all, or rather his whole situation became known. But I'm pretty sure there are thousands, if not millions, of people who are living vicariously through the internet in some Manti Te'o form. It's just that there are millions of dollars at stake. There was a career at stake, and it's a highly publicized event. I don't know where he goes with it. It's so embarrassing on some level, and so goddamn wacky. It's wacky as hell. Let me play a clip of his friend, folks. If I can even, let me just go down this briefly. Manti Te'o, as I just stated, Notre Dame footballer, on track, on the NFL fast track. There was allegedly Heisman Trophy talk. He had a sad sack story attached to his professionalism. He was able to produce on the field, so you have folks looking at him, folks in power, folks ready to make decisions on his career. They're looking at him, and the Heisman Trophy is yet another accolade to go in a certain direction. What made his story initially compelling was that he had a recent death with his grandmother. And then, allegedly, on the same day as the death of his grandmother, his girlfriend, whom we believe to be real, his girlfriend died from, I believe, cancer that was found out because of her car accident. So it's a double, triple, quadruple tragedy. Young man, 21 years of age, and he continued to play at a high standard with all this tragedy. So it makes for great copy. The media gobbles this up, and there you go. Well, what happens is, because we're in the Matrix, because there's such a thing as Google, it only takes one enterprising individual to pull out that one card to make your house of cards fall down. So someone went out there and was able to do some fact-checking, because everyone is in the Matrix. It's virtually impossible to lie, folks. That's what makes this even more compelling, is that it is harder to lie. He might have been able to get away with this in 1990, 1980, where there was less of an ability to fact-check. But now you can really fact-check stuff. Now, it depends if someone is willing to do that. Most people, because they're willing to accept lies, probably just accepted what he said is on his face value. It only took one reporter to say, okay, let's go into this. He dug into this thing and found, listen, we can't even find this woman. She doesn't appear to exist. When the House of Cards falls down, from what we're led to believe, the photograph of his girlfriend attached to this, I think, I forgot her name, Luau, Kenny Luau, I believe the name was a real person, but not the name that he gave this faux girlfriend. And it appears that his right-hand man, who's allegedly a friend, was pretending to be a girl for years in lengthy conversations with Manti. I mean, the whole thing is absurd. Listen, I've had friends that played that joke on me years ago, Captain, I will confess. But it lasted for about 2 minutes. I said, you know, they got tired of it, and I can detect an Adam's apple through the phone.
All right.
It's about a two-minute joke. How does a two-minute joke become a two-year joke? So I'm going to play this clip. But see, this guy talks about he loves him and all that and pretending to be a girl. So to me, you know, the man's sexuality is being called into play now. And I don't think he's gay, but people have brought that up now because the whole situation is wacky. But even a gay dude is able to get a beard easier than this cockamamie scheme. That's why I'm led to believe he's not gay. I think he's just dumb. He's a dim bulb. All right, folks, let's go to this. This is TMZ. Of course, they're going to be on top of this. This is Manti Te'o and his fake girlfriend slash male friend. I can't believe it. A two-minute joke goes into a two-year joke, folks. Hold on.
I'm just letting you know we just got here, and I'm getting ready for my first session, and I just want to call you, keep you posted. I miss you. I love you. Bye. I don't know who answered your phone. I don't care. This is my last time trying. You need to play what you want. Hey, babe, I'm just calling to say goodnight. I love you. I know that you're probably doing homework or you're with the boys or grabbing me. What a fatty. So I just want to say I love you and goodnight. And I'll be okay tonight. I'll do my best. Yeah, so get your rest, and I will talk to you tomorrow. I love you so much, and stay tuned.
You know, Captain, I said this to you privately, you know, that as a Generation X person, I don't like Generation Y people. They are a confused bunch. Who does this? This is a waste of time. This is hateration on a level. What kind of quote unquote friend does this? A hater does this, and a gay hater on top of that. I don't know what this is. To go this long, this guy had. They said they adhere to believe what. Because this is the problem, Captain. And they're going to move
sounds,
along.
It sounds like a girl with a boat.
Yeah, I guess. But when this girlfriend was dying, he never visited her. He never went to the funeral. So people are saying he might have been in on this. That this is all a ploy to gain favor with the Heisman people. You know, it's not bad. It's not good enough for, I don't use the term good enough, but it's not adequate enough for you to have a grandparent that dies. But to have a grandparent and a beauteous fake girlfriend that also died tragically, you combine that together, you're going to get the Heisman. So we don't know if this is some ploy, if this was a conspiracy for the Heisman. Now it's coming out that, at least according to the Katie Couric interview, that he lied about even having this online relationship because he was still seeing real girlfriends, flesh and blood girlfriends, but that he still maintained a relationship with a virtual girlfriend that was actually his male friend who went on for hours in conversations with this fool. Hours! It's a two-minute joke at best. How does a two-minute joke going for hours of professing love to another man? He's not going to get picked up. Before we close out on this madness, this matrix, because I'm about to take the plug out of the back of my neck right now. What do you think is going to happen to this young man's future? He was on the fast track. Who's going to hire this nut?
I think it drops his draft status, so he messed up some of his money. He'll still go, but, you know, it messed up some of his money.
I can't argue with you on that. I hope he's able to, you know, he's able to foster some kind of career from this. I just hate to see, especially a minority person, who was on the fast track, and now you look like you are a madman. Even if he's a victim, it's still crazy. The whole situation's crazy. All right, folks, enough of that. I pulled out my plug, so time to see some reality. Let's go to a quick groove, some black rock. Courtesy of the London Souls. Stand up. Stand up. Take out that plug, folks. Let's groove. London Souls. We're back, folks. That's some tough music right there. That's London Soul. Stand up, stand up. You know what I'm going to say. We got to do better than this. We have to start playing all this music. We really do. I'm trying my best to push it. We're creating an umbrella where we can start to see different people of color doing different things. We have a presidency, a second term for a black president, and we cannot keep on doing the old yuck, 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 shuck and jive jig 2013. Shouting out folks who are frequent commenters at Media Takeout and Bossett, because I've been throwing some links over there, throwing some shade, as they say, to come on over here. And I'm pleading with these folks that to look at all these folks on reality television and the Caucasian hair hats and the chicanery and tomfoolery and coonery and all the rees I can think of and isms I can think of, at some point we have to stand up and be prideful and really listen to some talent and do something different. Stop being predictable. You have other folks succeeding in spite of what we've been here for 400 years. And some of us are succeeding, but we still seem to be on the same theme of suffering, quote unquote, nigger nonsense. Pardon my French, but that's what it is. You know, creating this into some kind of business, being clowns has become a business. Luckily, Shorty Love was put out of business. Thank God for that, Captain. Thank God for that. But they were trying to pull the wool over your eyes, ladies and gentlemen. They are about to show you, as entertainment, a man that needed to be neutered years ago. All right, enough of that. I've said my piece. We'll be reflecting or genuflecting on that at some point later on. It is what it is. Folks, Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, 646-915-9620. Now, I want to talk about more madness from L.A. Now, I think we might have discussed this before, but this is a particular incident that's really, really bothersome for me on a lot of different levels. This is occurring in Compton, where a Latino presence, a Latino gang, has been intimidating black folks there, because now the numbers are starting to move from black to brown. And from my understanding, I'm looking at the LA Times now, that there was a black family that moved into a house just this Christmas. So it's a new family, a mother, three teenage children, and a 10-year-old boy that moved into this Compton home over the Christmas vacation. And they haven't been there any time. And they were literally terrorized by a local Latino street gang who threw out the N-word, beat, I believe, a visitor to the home. Another teenager came by to visit the family home, and they said, essentially, we don't want your kind to be here. Now, these are brown folks, mind you, telling black folks to get out of this community, and they just proceeded to have violent attacks. The visitor to this home was beaten with a metal pipe. They drew a gun on him and proceeded to beat him with a metal pipe. So if you look at this LA Times article, it says here, I'm just going to read something quickly. It says, Compton, with a population of about 97,000, was predominantly black for many years. It is now 65% Latino and 33% black, according to the 2010 U.S. Census. But it's not only historically black areas that have been targeted. Federal authorities have alleged in several indictments in the last decade that the Mexican Mafia prison gang has ordered street gangs under its control to attack African Americans. Leaders of the Azusa 13 gang were sentenced to lengthy prison terms earlier this month for leading a policy of attacking African American residents and expelling them from their town. This gets me because I think, A, you're talking about minorities. You're talking about people of color in the general sense. You're talking about the overarching white supremacist paradigm that looks and laughs at this. You know, this is almost interracial to me. This is almost interracial. Just as ludicrous as it would be for there to be issues between the skin tone within African-American culture. Now we have brown men of color attacking black folks of color in a depressed community that nobody owns. No one owns this property. So, and on top of that, we have our own black gangs that could easily have gotten funky with this black family. No one likes black people. No one likes black people. And I've seen this type of stuff, not up close, incidentally, but I've heard about this even further out east of New York, where you have a Salvadoran community that almost similar circumstances with what happened in Compton. Areas in Long Island that were predominantly black for many years, now that there's more of a brown influx, the two cultures are not necessarily mixing properly on a social level. Mr. Starks from the Honor Guard can talk about this rather succinctly, since he works in the school system out there, and he has said rather horrifically of high schools where there's black and brown tension. Now, mind you, you go further west where we are, the captain and myself, where we broadcast from, we're not seeing that because, rather bluntly, the Dominican population, the Puerto Rican population, there's African DNA there. There's African DNA there, and there's more of a camaraderie. There's more of there's a political kinship, for Christ's sake. There's a political dynamic with black and brown in New York, but we have to be educated to know that the Hispanic culture is an ethnicity, and there are different types of Latin folk, different types of Hispanic folk, and even intraculturally with Hispanics, there are problems. A lot of it, actually, and Kathy can talk about this, is centered on who was blacker than thou. Who was blacker than thou? So some of that is rooted in that. But for brown folks to attack black folks or vice versa, when the predominant culture hates all of you, hates both of you, is insanity. And Captain peeped this correctly behind the scenes. He talked about how this is emanating from the prisons. Captain, I want you to go in more on that.
Well, yes, just as you said right there. As we already see the styles, the dress, you know, the clothes that come out of prison. We have the do-rags, we have stocking cap, we have the sagging pants. Prison culture. So it's dictating what's happening on the street. Now, when you go into prison, Latin people go with their own. Black people go with their own. White people, they go with their own. The Asian people, the few, they go with their own. Everybody just goes off into their own little groups. That's how it is. And what happens over there on the West Coast, black and brown are set in opposition inside the prison system. Happens a little bit over here, too, on the East Coast. Happens somewhat over here. It happened a lot in the 80s and the 90s here, but they didn't bring it out into the street so much here on the East Coast. As the prison population is growing bigger and bigger and bigger, you have more Latin people going into prison. You have more black people going into prison. Black people, a lot of times, it seems like once they get out in the street, they don't hold that animosity. It's business as usual, whatever they go back into. It's all right, what have you. But it seems like the Latin gangs, which are very strong, these individuals want to dictate from the prison system what's happening in the street. You fool, you in prison. That doesn't dictate what happens in the street. That's low intelligence. There's certain things you have to do when you go to prison. I understand that. I understand that. You have to survive. This is the street. Day to day, your people are going to a job. That mentality is never, ever going to work. You're just making it hectic and making it worse out here because those individuals you have out here on the street, they're going to end up in prison. You get a bigger prison population, then it just starts a whole cycle over and over and over again. But ultimately, it's the prison mentality that's dictating what's happening on the street. That's ultimately what's happening. Lower tier dictating what's supposed to be happening up in the mid-tier and trying to let that fester and grow up into the upper tier and stratosphere. That's what's exactly happening right here. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I couldn't agree anymore, and it really hurts me personally on some visceral level because, and I guess the main denominator, Captain, is education. It is education because the Latin folk that we associate with, our dear friends of various Latin ethnicities, we don't play this. We don't play this. We don't see this. But as I think about it, either they have degrees on both sides of the fence, black and brown, they are obtaining degrees. So they have to, because you said the ignorance that's festering in the prison industrial complex is spilling into the streets, and the lack of education is here. You can see it because the educated folks. And I said I was speaking to the Oracle, the tangential producer of the show, my father, and I was saying, and this is something that you can't say on terrestrial radio, Captain. Sergio Mims, who we always speak behind the scenes, you know, emailing each other and that kind of thing, and he emailed me. Always emails me on the wild things that are going on in Chicago. Chicago, this block never cools down. It's always hot. The block never cools down. So he emails me this. It's tragic, but it's custom now. Of a woman who lost three of her children in different periods of her life and their lives. They were still young people, but they died a few years in between each other. A daughter and I think two sons. The son was like in his early 30s, and he just died, I guess, a few days ago. He was shot in the head while sitting in a car, and his passenger was wounded. And the mother is crying out, essentially saying, "What did I do wrong? What did I do?" You never hear of a father. You never hear of a male presence in these situations. That's one thing you peep out. But something you can't say, but I'm going to say it, where's the education? Do you really honestly see educated black folk being caught up in these situations? We know that there can be exceptions, but I'm talking about the rule, ladies and gentlemen. The rule, and actually statistics prove this. Statistics show and say that the better educated black folk live longer, live more prosperous lives. They're not caught up in this Rube Goldberg insanity. And for those who are new to the show, who the hell is Rube Goldberg? Rube Goldberg, if you look at these cartoons, and he had this wacky machinery where it will, in order to butter some toast, maybe even a Pee Wee Herman movie, in order to butter some toast, you'll have a room-sized contraption. You flick a card, you drop a ball, and it goes through all these mazes just to butter some toast or just to do the most simplest act. That's a Rube Goldberg machine. So some of the things that lower-tier people get involved in, it's a whole menagerie. A whole complex puzzle that ends up in tragedy. 3, 4, 5 different moves gets to tragedy. And we can never discuss it. We know there's racism. We know there's poverty. We know these things, but we never talk about culture. We never talk about education. And education is the It's the necessary ingredient to save some of these lives. I sincerely believe that. There's got to be something with the DNA is the same, folks. Still black folks, but the educated black men are not getting shot in their foreheads sitting in a car comfortably. This is custom. It's canon. It's canon, Captain. It's almost from a comic book sense. It's continuity with black people. So no one bats an eye. So it's a shame that now we have brown folk on the West Coast attacking the black people. But all of this is vendettas rooted out from the prison industrial complex. And I don't know if Saint Obama, as much as I have a great deal of respect for our president, I think it's unfair to weigh all that on him. But I assure you, Cornel West, Tavis Smiley, they're hoping that he'll spread his magical wings and make all this dysfunctionalism and madness just go away. I don't see it happening. We got about 5 minutes remaining, Captain. Any thoughts on this? To close out?
I think that's really all we can say at this given time. I think we covered it very well. We just have to see how it pans out.
I couldn't agree. You know, let's go to you know what? Let's not, because we got about 5 minutes. I was going to talk about, I have a clip, but I don't think I'm going to play the clip because we only have about 5 minutes, just to kind of segue into something else, something a little bit more lighthearted. I was looking at the Daily Beast, and just as the Huffington Post has their own internet TV presence, I believe The Root does too now. The Root has their own TV thing. The Beast, the Daily Beast, has their own internet TV thing. So on the Beast TV, they had this clip about the death of the PC, or the death of the traditional personal computer. And I have to admit, even personally, I haven't purchased a computer in a long time. I was thinking about upgrading. But do you see that as the future, that the PC is going away, that now we're dealing with smartphones, we're dealing with iPads, that the PC is, as we know, because I think Dell is on the way down, all these large computer companies are not producing the same level of product as they did 10, 15 years ago.
Well, I was involved with a network marketing company years ago, about 15 years ago. And, you know, one of the high-level individuals in the company said that we will be heading towards just having devices that allow you to just surf the web. You do not need the PC, so to speak, anymore. And if you look really what you're doing, most of the power that we have with the PC, most individuals don't need that. They just need to go on their web. They're going on Facebook. They're going on Twitter. You know, so I can somewhat see what they're saying at this given time. I don't think it's just going to die just like that. It would take some time. But I can definitely see where the particular individual person was making their statement, you know, where they wanted to go and what they were saying. I could see exactly where it's, you know, I could see that point of view. You know, but I don't think it's going to happen just right away. I just don't think it's going to happen right away, though.
Well, I think what it is, what they were saying, is that the product really hasn't changed that much. The product hasn't changed. There hasn't really been anything so extreme where it's like, wow, this is so mind-blowing. Because I've purchased external hard drives. I have like a 2-terabyte hard drive.
Yes.
Well, why would I, why would I need a conventional PC? I would just keep on adding on. I mean, it's all about power now.
Yes.
So, I definitely want to get an iPad. So it's kind of interesting that between the iPads and personal video gaming, your video game is essentially a computer. Your phone is a computer. They have these Google glasses they're trying to push at some point. So I think we probably will not see the traditional PC. I think it's coming to an end at some point. All right, ladies and gentlemen, always a pleasure. Always trying to give you our best. We'll be back again on Wednesday with more stuff. That's what we do, more information. I hope you enjoy it. Try to email me with your thoughts, ideas. On occasion, I see Black Ronan sent me a great email. So AfroNerdBlog@Yahoo. Also, check us out on Twitter. Check us out on Facebook. Continue to like us. Let's get our like numbers up. Holler back, as they say. We're all over the place. We'll do it again on Wednesday. Let's go to a quick classic groove. This is 100 miles per hour. See you on Wednesday. It's been real.